creature seems to feel the same way too.
Good morning, Fairbanks. You are listening to Cafe R Radio. We're at 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, and we live stream at cafearradio.com. This is Problem Corner. I'm your host, David Pruse. If you want to call into today's incredible show, we're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. And since I set the standard, you three better not let me down, Jen Uhas.
Why is he calling me out by name?
Al Barrett.
Yeah.
It's a good show. Now, Al, we have an issue with poor Wayne. He is just depressed. You know, he's talking about the state of the union and mankind. He needs an intervention with the squirrels.
Yeah.
He does. Jen, you got the 4-year-old dog who does great now retrieving.
For me.
For you. He needs to help Wayne.
You know, he should come over. You know, part of the reason he's missing his... we have a wire-haired pointing Griffon, and they have that
fuzzy
Muppet
dog.
Face.
Yep.
Except he doesn't look like one because he shaves his whiskers because he's such a good vole and squirrel hunter. He sticks his whole face in the holes, and so he doesn't have these plumes.
Down,
everybody
down.
Says, what is he? I mean, he kind of looks like a Griff, but he doesn't have the face. I'm like, oh, yeah, he shaves himself. But he does. We should bring him over to your house to chase your squirrels.
Maybe that would help.
Yeah.
But I've figured out that squirrels are like ptarmigan and mountain goats. There's always one lurking in a lesser habitat to fill any vacancies.
It's the law of squirreltropy.
Jen, look at it this way. It's not about Wayne anymore. It's about your dog and the happiness of the dog. He would enjoy that.
He's so happy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, Laundry House Gang, how y'all doing?
Excellent.
I'm depressed.
Eeyore, love you anyway.
And in walks the compo, right on time. What, you're selling a snow machine?
I got my bench here.
Oh, okay.
Just listen.
Jen, lots of meetings going on. Well, let's bring us to that first. A lot of meetings.
So there's no shortage of meetings, and we know a famous quote is, the world is run by those who show up to meetings. And these four, the five of us in here, are people who show up to meetings. Go online. On the first Tuesday of the month, the second Tuesday of the month, we're talking about, you know, the fish and game issues and DNR land management. So that's what this group usually goes to. But you can go to aws.state.ak.us or just search online public notices, State of Alaska, and you can find just about any regulatory meeting to soothe your heart's desire. I know Randy Griffin shows up to a lot of public meetings, common listener here on Problem
Shout
Corner.
Out to Randy. Randy, I know you're listening. How you doing, buddy? Anyway.
those of us who show up to meetings, where do you find them? Right now, the Fish and Game Advisory Committee started back up last week. We've got the Alaska Trappers Association just started back up last week for the winter season, once a month meetings. We've got all kinds of local government. But if you go online, you can find the boards and commissions page. There's a lot out there right now, including simply public comment opportunities. I know that Craig and Al want to talk about that a little bit. But federal and state, all politics are local. We need to comment online. Specifically, David, I'm going to let somebody else talk here, but we were talking before we came on about things that are happening on the federal and the state level. And, you know, Kate McGregor is back at Department of Interior, and I had a fantastic opportunity to meet her two Januaries ago at the SCI convention in Nashville when she was consulting, because we had a different administration at the time. And she said when she was in Department of Interior before, it is so important, even just for a few of us, we end up thinking, and sometimes during certain administrations, they do play the game of how many lower 48 environmentalists commented on a form and say, you know, 264 to three of you. However, Kate said legally, as long as we are getting those comments in with a sound principle, and some of those principles that this group often comments is that hunting, fishing, trapping development and recreation are compatible uses. That's something very important to get into almost every land management plan if we want to have access to those resources for those opportunities. When it's development, we remind everyone hunting, fishing, trapping, and recreation are still compatible. Go ahead and develop. Just let us come in. And when we comment on land management plans that development is compatible with uses that are already occurring, then we don't have pushback from, you know, some of the large development projects up here have curtailed access. And we've said, no, you don't have to. It's a compatible use. We're happy to see you develop. We still just want to hunt, fish, trap, collect, and recreate out there.
It actually enhances. Oftentimes the development will enhance. For example, Pogo. We've seen more moose up there up until the last couple of years around the Pogo area. We've got more moose within a few miles of Pogo than we have, and I think they're curious, there's noise, and they're not scared off by some of the noise.
When you say
noise.
They're not scared off because we're not allowed to access it.
We are. I'm talking by boat. By boat, but I'm saying if that road was accessible, there'd be a lot more opportunity.
Yes.
When you say the last few years, Craig, is that because your success rate went down?
It did. The last 2 years, it did. But I still blame it on the rain 3 years ago.
I thought it was
the
wolves.
In the middle of December.
You know, we were at the AC meeting last week talking about the release of the bison. And if you didn't know, haven't seen online, thanks to Luke Rogers, he did go ahead and put that on Facebook that if you have seen one of the wood bison, they want you to take a picture or call in and say where it was, and you can get a free hat, part of the wood bison team. But for a long time, there was opposition to that release because some of the development organizations, even Duane for a while, was opposed because they were afraid that if you put these things there, they're not going to be able to develop. As long as we are talking to each other and making those comments into the public record that, no, we go ahead and develop. Releasing these bison and having the opportunities that would come in the future doesn't have to stop your development. Let's do it all together. We can make some progress.
Now, you know, we have Craig here, and we have to go through this. He doesn't have his skidoo shop anymore, but Craig, if someone bought a boat from you, would they get free storage now?
No.
no discount.
But they'll get a good deal.
It's $11 per foot.
Yep, per month, $11 a foot.
Yeah. Per month. Yeah. No deal.
That is a deal. That's cheaper than Cerny had it 2 years ago.
No deal, right here at Compost.
Yeah. Get your rig in there. This is the last week, so you got to get your boat or car or truck down there. We got about 10 or 15 spots left, so I appreciate the free plug in the middle of all this conversation.
Yeah, there's nothing free.
Hey, I do have a comment. I don't know if we have to go to the break.
Yeah.
On some of this trail committee, and Al sent out an email yesterday, and we'll give you the email address where you can comment on the trail recreational trails, public input, public comment period. And one thing a lot of these listeners, because I know your demographics, could comment on, in addition to what Jen talked about compatible uses, is the demographics here. I'm sitting here with a knee brace, a back brace, and I got two bum shoulders. Motorized access is important for a lot of Alaskans, especially those of the age listening to this show. It's a good idea to comment and mention it. I can't get out there. I'd love to get out there and hike up I can't do it. I need some motorized access. So that's something
here
important.
I throw a
point.
Backpack on and go sheep hunting.
I've done
you
that. Not
boy,
doing it anymore.
Boy, I dragged your butt up that mountain.
Yeah, you did. That was 40 years ago.
There you go. Yes.
So if they want to go to just simply Google, a lot of times you don't have a pen handy. Maybe, you know, I know there's a lot of guys working in a shop right now listening, so you don't have to write down the address. But if you simply Google Recreational Trails Program Input, you'll find the Alaska Recreational Trails Advisory Committee, RTAC, and you'll find the open comments.
There you go. Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. We're at 907-458-TALK. 907-458-8255. I have the Laundry House Gang here, and every month you get the best outdoor information that can be had in Fairbanks from 4 to 5 experts, and we'll be back after these moments.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Hey, it's Craig Campo inviting you to kick back with me by the campfire every Saturday for the Outdoor Show. We'll be talking about living the Alaskan outdoor dream with fascinating guests, even some favorite stories and memories from a lifetime spent on the trails and waterways, hunting, fishing, and camping across this great state. Join me, Craig Campo, for the Outdoor Show, brought to you by Compos since 1945. Listen in Saturday afternoons at 12:30 p.m. for the outdoor show right here on KFAR Radio.
Alaska's number one choice for great getaways, Camper Valley RV, is rolling into Fairbanks with RVs fully prepped and ready to roll. Start your winter adventures off right, whatever your style, with a truck camper, travel trailer, or an outdoors RV. Choose from Keystone, Evo, Northern Light, Lance, Passport, or Venture. If it's rugged backcountry trips or luxurious road travel, Camper Valley RV has the ultimate package for you. Alaska's number one choice for great getaways, Camper Valley RV, where Alaska goes to get away. Weather brought to you by Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing, offering 24-hour service from Salcha to Nanana and no mileage charge on callouts. The Bigfoot with the helping hand. Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing.
KFAR Weather.
Daytime highs approaching 42. Today, under cloudy skies with a slight chance for showers. Northeast winds around 5 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected again. Tonight, lows level off around 31. Daytime highs approaching 45. Tomorrow, cloudy skies expected. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have the Laundry House Gang in here with me. We're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. And Craig Compo, knock that off. God almighty. But anyway, leave the purple padded room alone. Yeah. Al, what do you got on your mind?
Oh, we just finished up a, you know, moose season, caribou sheep season, and so working down at Santa Smokehouse or Interior Fish for the last couple years. Last year was really bad on meat coming in. It was dirty, it was spoiled, there was gravel. I would think about 3 out of every 10 moose were like that, or caribou were like that. This year was totally different. It was like 1 out of 10.
Better field.
Yeah, it's just weird how that changes from year to year. That, you know, was really enjoyable working with other people's meat and handling it and preparing it for them, you know. And it sure saves a lot of time when we're not having to clean it or, you know, get the gravel off it and the leaves off it and the hair off of it. And so that was something I noticed this year. Other than that, you know, I've just been pretty busy down there and working on getting the cabin ready for the trap line and such things.
I got a question for Al. So due to my recent non-success hunting last couple of years versus the 40 previous really successful years, I've noticed, you know, the last couple, 3 years, too, it's been extremely warm. The leaves haven't fallen. It's a more difficult hunt. But the question is, it's harder to take care of the meat when it's that warm if you do get a moose early. And I would like to see, maybe put in a proposal, I was going to ask Al about that, about maybe moving a hunt in a specific area just 3 days. Not adding days, but moving it 3 days later. Because it seems like the last day of the hunt is when they finally start coming out and we miss the opportunity. Then there's a lot of people I see bringing moose down the river that's ruined. Yeah. I mean, they're floating or they, like this year, they were having to slide the boat over gravel bars for a mile because of a new spot. But, I mean, that meat is not going to be good for 5 days in that temperature under a tarp in a boat.
We're going to come back to that. I'm going to take a phone call real fast.
Okay.
Good morning. You're on KFAR Radio, and your name is?
My name is.
What's that, sir? Hello? You're breaking up. Now you're... Well, you're breaking up too much. Is your radio on?
It is.
Okay, there you go. There, much better.
Woohoo!
Yeah, I've got a cabin due south of town in the foothills of the Alaska Range, and they had instigated a cow season there a number of years ago. I don't know, 7 years ago. They were saying there wasn't enough browse to support the moose. The locals here now claim that that caused the population collapse, but they've had a couple of big fires here in the last 2 years. How long before the moose population benefits from those fires in the form of good browse? I'll hang up listening to your
Jen, what do you think?
Oh, I was signaling a number of years, but I was pointing it out. We got our Board of Game member right here.
Yeah, so
that doesn't mean he's the expert, but go ahead, Al.
Yeah, so he's correct. You know, several years ago we had a habitat issue for the population of moose we had down there, and so we eliminated, you know, through cows, we eliminated, you know, a lot of moose. So we did see a drastic drop in the population, but that was predetermined. And since then, and he mentioned the fires, and I just happened to be at the meeting last Wednesday that gave us an update on that, that the fires have actually been doing really well for the moose out there. The twinning rates and ratio of cows with twins is really high, at average or above average right now. So that you're seeing the effects of a fire out there now, this good, healthy moose population.
Al, going back to Craig's thought, what would it take to take an area and change the opening and closing date but still have the same number of days? Because it seems like if you look at our weather patterns now, we don't get a good frost until Halloween Day.
Well, I'll start with my disclaimer. I'm representing myself and not any thoughts or ideas or issues with the Board of Game.
Al. But, you're in a purple padded room.
But
you give it up. Come
I'm
on.
Advised by legal to say stuff like that.
Okay. Are you with the Borough Assembly?
No.
Are you with the Borough Assembly?
No.
Okay.
Anyways, what it takes is a proposal to come before the board. We can't, generally, we can't, you know, just make up these things.
Oh, yeah.
Generally. There are exceptions to the rule.
You know, you got a doctor next to you.
And so we'd have to go through and see what the data would do. Sometimes when you do stuff like that and you only do it in one area, you get this balloon effect. You close the season over here normally, and then this one runs 3 days longer, and then you get a rush of people over to that area for three extra days.
So you'd have to do it in the whole region. If you
that stops some of that, but then you got to figure out what, you know, how successful people are. And you know, you may go to antler restrictions instead of a general season when you do things like that.
But but
it's
Craig,
all based on science as Craig, much as we can.
Craig, you're talking about moose, but do you see the caribou migration following that same pattern of later?
Well, caribou are more unpredictable, I think, anyway. You never know where they're going to go and when. The moose were generally more predictable. They're going to be in this area or whatever. You know, having been
come down higher from higher elevations.
Devastated by predators the last couple of years, and then you have the warm weather and the later frost or later cold. It just seems like right when you're getting ready to leave on the 15th is about the first time they'll even try to respond to a call, and so it's just more difficult. So I don't know. I don't want to see antler restrictions. I'd rather leave it the way it is, and I don't want to extend it 5 or 10 days, but even if it was 3 days, it would really help out. Again, I understand Al's point is if you do it in one area, you know, you do it in 20D but not 20A, whatever, all of a sudden you get a rush of people, but it's kind of hard to rush in that area in 3 days. You know, it takes a while.
Or there's more people there from the beginning.
Yeah, that could be too. Yeah, so yeah, it's a double-edged sword. You got to play it. We'll see how it goes. Hopefully, it turns on its own.
Dr. Heimer, your thoughts on the Gerdansers?
There's a little bit of a controversy of what happens with moose, and part of it may be my fault because 50 years ago I began to talk about photoperiod and hormones in sheep. And these days,
are you talking about sex on this show?
I am.
Okay, go ahead.
And the department position, as I've heard it, is that it's all photoperiodic and moose are not that much influenced by weather and so forth. But the common understanding of people that have been out there a lot is that when it frosts and the leaves fall off, the bulls get more active. And, you know, photoperiod's the same every year.
Yeah.
But there seems to be some variability in what the moose actually do. So, you know, there. Who knows? You know, some folks say one thing, some folks say another, and you know, I'm thinking, what does it hurt if we want to experiment with changing the season a few days? The nature of the department and the Board of Game is they are dreadfully afraid of making a mistake, and you can't actually operate in a system where you can't control everything without risking mistake.
Do you think? On the opposite side of that, my philosophy is it's more dangerous to operate in a system that you know is not working. So try something else.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Al?
Yeah, so to follow up on Wayne and this photo deal.
this what deal? Photo yeah. deal?
So my theory is, and my belief is...
Dr. Al.
Yeah, so when it's warm like this, the moose are more active in the evening when it's cooler than when it's cold, you know, cooler yeah. when that first frost comes. They'll stay active longer during daylight hours than if it was sunny and warm and 65 degrees out there. They're going to go find a shaded spot and then continue their rut activity in the evenings when it's cooler.
Jen?
So your caller mentioned the controversy behind the 28 cow hunt, and I was hoping that either Wayne or Al could just, we get in our bubble and we all know the history, but you know that has been controversial for a long time. But can you run through again how that gets authorized and that it needs the support of the advisory committees and it has to go through them, you know, the local?
Yeah, so pretty much like Jen was saying, antlerless reauthorizations have to happen every year. And they're approved by the ACs that have been designated for that unit or subunits or units. And so, you know, like the 20A one, which was really super controversial, you know, 15 years ago, that has Delta, Nenana, Middle Nenana, Fairbanks, and I believe Eagle, all as designated ACs that can approve or disapprove an antlerless hunt. And so that's where an AC has some power. And lately there's been some pushback through the ACs, not approving it, not rubber stamping, you know, antlerless hunts like they used to do. You know, there's a lot more people looking at that and not satisfied with keeping antlerless hunts on the book.
And anyone can attend those. Next month, we'll have our elections for our Fairbanks Advisory Committee. And anyone who shows up can be elected to the open seats, sit on that board. It's a citizens advisory committee run by the citizens. And just because you're not on it, I've been a fixture there for many years without sitting on it, had a lot of pressure to try and fill one of the empty seats. Don't need to. You can show up, give your comments, give your input, be part of the discussion.
How?
Let me just finish up on that.
Yeah.
If you want to have a seat on that Fairbanks AC or any of them that are around there, you know, show up with a, you know, 10 of your friends and nominate yourself or have one of your friends nominate you. And
Jim Sampson did that for years.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
have a good chance of getting on, you know, elected on there then.
What we should do is you should tell me the date, and about 2 days before we come on here and rally people to go there and participate.
Yeah. First Wednesday of November.
First Wednesday of November. So the first Monday of November, we should do that.
Yes.
Or the first Tuesday is...
Laundry House.
Laundry House. Gang. There
Remind everyone to go to the AC at the J.P. Jones Center the next night.
There you go. Mr. Heimer.
I'm relieved to find out that this cow hunt that the caller mentioned happened 15 years ago or whatever. You know, that was kind of a long time in moose life. And, you know, I've been a casual observer of what goes on with moose management in 20A for 50 years. And the idea that we are going to alter the nutritional balance out there by a limited cow hunt is one that I've never been able to pencil out that makes much sense in terms of numbers. I don't know how the department does that. I know they're operating on principle many times.
Well, how I look at it is the condition of the animal. And if we're talking about 28 moose, I have several indicators that I like is, you know, what are their twinning rates? What are their calf weights when they're born? You know, what are their short yearling weights? What is their rump fat?
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. We'll continue this when we come back. We're also going to look at any predator control items that are coming up. We're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. You have the Laundry House Gang in the studio, and it's a purple padded room, and they're doing well.
Mm-hmm.
more Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM.
Fox News, I'm John Saucier. The 20 living hostages who were held captive in Gaza have been reunited with their families. Negotiations are going to start on phase two of the agreement. Senate Majority Leader John Thune spoke about this peace deal on the Fox News channel.
You think about thousands of years of history and the warring that's been going on in that region, and more recently, obviously, and of course, the terrible attacks from a couple of years ago, and what the president has been able to achieve here is nothing short of remarkable.
All the living hostages have been returned, but four of the 24 deceased hostages were handed over to Israel. The government shutdown continues. Lawmakers still have not passed a spending bill. Virginia Democratic Congressman Don Beyer criticizing President Trump.
I'm angry because of the stupidity and the lack of vision, the cruelty and the sheer meanness of this administration.
The president says he is willing to negotiate a deal involving health care, but says the government must be reopened first. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
Alaska's news source reports that homes loosened from their foundations, carried away by surging seas, floating far from their original site. It sounds absurd, but this is exactly what many in western Alaska experienced over the week as Typhoon Halong battered the coast. Kipnuk resident and tribal administrator Tristan Carl was among those who found their homes suddenly shifting beneath their feet. I was looking outside the living room window, Carl said, and I noticed that the house shifted a little bit at first, and then the water rose a little bit more, and then a really strong gust of wind, and the next thing our house started moving. Carl said there were 13 people in the house, many of them screaming and shouting as the house floated across the river. We actually floated in between the bridge and the Kipnuk Traditional Council, and we did bump something, buildings or boats or something, but it was hard to tell. As of Monday afternoon, Carl says everyone in Kipnuk is accounted for, many of them taking shelter in the school, roughly 700, he said. A few families have returned to their homes if they remained in place, but for most, they will have
streaming
to rebuild.
Online at KFAR660.com.
Getting a little personal here, but true story. So I hurt my knee and a friend says, go see Dr. Kim Driftmeyer at McKinley Orthopedics. So glad I did. Turns out I needed surgery. Dr. Driftmeyer and his team took great care of everything right here in Fairbanks. MRI, physical therapy, surgery, all in one place. Easy, efficient, honestly, kind of pleasant. Oh, and did you know he's also an outstanding spine surgeon? Sports injury, broken bones, or just need a tune-up? Go see Dr. Kim Driftmeyer. McKinley Orthopedics. Trusted care, local team, real results.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. Got the Laundry House gang in here with me, and we're having a great discussion about moose photos and sexual aspects and, you know, but...
He's really focused on that.
Yeah.
But it seems like the... Is there any time there's predator control, that's an immediate help in the population boost for moose?
Is there?
You tell me.
Unit 16 kind of comes to my mind. I think it's Unit 16. It's where all the bears got, you know, scandalously killed out
there.
And, you know, calf survival went up almost immediately,
it out. I actually baited for the state out there with that bumper crop of black bear those years.
Yeah.
So
thank you.
There's predator controls that really do work, and that's what happened with 40 Mile Caribou when we had, you know, years and years of predator control on wolves and some bears out there. We had a 2-bear bag limit way before anyone else, I think, in the state. But then there's areas like Unit 19, I believe, just south of McGrath or right around there, where we have a same-day airborne or our aerial predator control out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not working in my eyes. It's not working because logistically it's a long way for anybody to go in their airplane to find wolves. And then, two, there's not enough people that want to do that. And so when you're in a
predator... So it's implementation of the program that's not working.
Right. So when you're in a program like that, you need to be taking, you know, about 70-75% of your population of wolves in there to be effective. And when you're only taking 10% potentially, you're not having any kind of effect on them.
And that 75% will only be a decline for about 4 years.
Well, as long as your program, they'll still produce.
Yeah, but what I mean is that immediate species removal...
Right.
If you don't do anything else, in 4 years they're back. So you got to, it's continuous after that.
Yeah, it takes like 3 years and they're back, the full population.
This is an interesting story. I'll try to be brief, but
no, you won't.
Yeah, I'll
try. He said he'd try.
I'll try. You know, you may argue about what you see in the aftermath of a predator control program that it lasts a while and then doesn't. Mm-hmm. But if you think about it, you know, population growth, particularly of a prey population, is a function or it's determined by the environmental resistance to population growth. It's like, I use an analogy, it's like electricity. You know, when you go in a room and you turn on the switch, what you do is you decrease the resistance to current flow and the light comes on. You decrease the environmental resistance to population growth of whatever you're trying to grow, and it's going to grow. And when you've got a complex situation where you've got, you know, wolves and bears and what all ever else, you've got a mess.
Or squirrels.
Or squirrels. But the idea that we can do pulsed population, you know, predator control is a goofy idea that came out of spruce bud stuff years ago, and it was brought into wildlife management by a fellow who was a wolf protectionist who's no longer with us. And it became a trendy thing. We talk about the predator pit and releasing the population as though you can knock the predators down and suddenly everything's going to come to happy equilibrium. That doesn't happen. You got to keep after it if you want it to work.
Ms. Juhas?
Well, I just want to take a minute, too, your listenership generally supports those measures, and a lot of our listeners understand the science that goes into that. I answered the questions from the people in the lower 48 that would call up all angry about predator management for the department, and in 2004, I ran the ballot initiative defeat. The ballot initiative would have outlawed bear baiting, and then in 2008, I ran the defeat again for the ballot initiative that would have outlawed aerial predator management, you know, for wolves and bear. And I had to explain to so many people, you hear, oh, well, you know, if the moose population's down, if the young population's down, just go kill some wolves. You say, well, that may or may not be the problem. And our experts at the department actually go through a laborious process of determining whether or not that is what, as Mr. Heimer said, Dr. Heimer said, you know, the resistance to growth. If it's determined that that's not the primary resistance to growth. You know, we talk about these predator management programs. They're often only, they're really only authorized for small subunits of our 26 game management units across the state that's divided up the same way the United States is divided into states. We have 26 game management units with many subunits where we've authorized this practice when we've ruled out the other barriers to growth.
You know, Wayne, the reason why I bring this up is I'm trying to get you re-enthusiastic about your squirrel issue.
You're a kind man.
I got it. You know, there's this. I got to get you back. You know, you can do this.
You know, he's not Perky Heimer. He's like Eeyore in here today. I feel
there's
bad.
There's no
for
surrender.
You.
There's no more surrender. Well, it's war on the squirrels.
Defeated.
13-year-olds with a 20-gauge, Wayne. Come on.
I set a bunch of traps. That's
you got to start. That's a start.
You know, maybe it's photo period, but the squirrels did not betray their presence like they normally do by throwing cones on the roof of the tin shed. Usually you can make some dent in the population there because you can find them.
We need to set up some cameras.
I have a solution. Mr. Compo.
Yeah.
Until you go to Mexico, you're retired. Get over there with a 20 gauge. You and Johnny Hajdukovic. Yeah, just got back from the lake. You should be well schooled with operational control with a 12 gauge. Go kick some squirrel booty.
Yeah, I'm going to leave that to the professor. But duck hunting was slow this year. Again, no ice at all. Been warm. But
local ducks took off fast.
Yeah, not enough greenheads this year, but it's always good going into Healy Lake. Johnny and I try and be the last ones out of there. He's just going back in tomorrow. I'm not going back in. I'm going a little further south in Healy Lake.
Yeah, but look at it. You know, I got my snow tires on last week, and I'm You know, I hope my studded tires aren't getting, you know, worn down.
Hey, I do have a question maybe for Al or Wayne or Jen even. I've noticed a lot more grouse. I haven't gone grouse hunting this year, but I've noticed a lot more of them when I'm out hunting, whether it be duck hunting or moose hunting or whatever. Are they on the upswing? And does that signify anything as far as other potential? Is there any correlation between grouse hunting and any other sort of hunting?
Yeah.
Yeah, we started seeing a definite increase in ptarmigan and grouse populations in the wintertime running my trap line, and the hares. You're starting to see some more hares. And so what that does is, you know, it affects, you know, some of that prey population. So lynx will start coming back. Mm-hmm. We're on a kind of a low end of a lynx cycle. Now it'll start climbing, and you'll see the same thing for fox. They're not such as cyclical as lynx are. But to follow up on Wayne's predator control, you know, and maybe simplified a little bit more than what he was talking about, is the object of predator control is to give that ungulate population an advantage to be very productive. Mm-hmm. And there'll be a point where you don't have to have any more predator control, and the ungulate population can outproduce the predator's take on that population and still grow.
You have to show me.
We got a couple phone calls lined up, so we're getting some good conversation. Good morning, you're on KFAR Radio, and your name is? Good morning, you're on KFAR Radio, and your name is?
Good morning. This is Lucy.
Hello, Lucy. We're hoping it was you. How are you doing?
You talk about moose, you dear Colin. You're talking to me. No, I'm doing good. I remember we used to hunt over at McDonald. I don't know if any of you remember that. You're probably not as old as I am, but we hunted over in McDonald. There was a lot of moose then, but the military came along and shut that thing.
Oh.
So we started hunting in a nearby creek, which is Clear Creek. And my family still hunts up there. I wanted to ask, moose seem in that area, they seem to be pretty low this year. I don't know how often the Fish and Game count the numbers in that area. But another problem is we are seeing a lot more grizzly, even around here. I live in Two Rivers area, and there's a lot more signs of grizzly bear. Last year, we saw two huge cows that were killed not far from where we live. And I was curious, does Fish and Game ever count the grizzly? And how often do you count the...
Jen, do you got an answer for that?
Every year on May 10th. Well, because I used to coordinate the airspace with the J-Park airspace planning, and red flag is usually happening at the same time. And so the grizzly bear biologist goes and does her surveys out there, and she starts each year at May 10th. And so she's got to get in there to keep the survey data, you know. I'm sure it'd still be defensible, but it's just best when it's always the same date every year. And they go and they try to count them.
There we go.
Well... But
yeah,
you're a doctor now.
I'm a little dated probably, and with my information. But I can't recall. Maybe Al or Jen can help me. I can't recall ever a grizzly bear estimate that was not way under what seemed to be there.
Definitely, because they're so hard to find.
Yeah. How are you going to count grizzly bears?
Lucy, thank you very much for the phone call. Always great hearing from you. We got another phone call. You have a great day. Thank you. Okay.
You're listening. Thank you. Bye.
Yep. Good morning. You're on KFAR Radio, and your name is?
Randy.
Hello, Randy.
It's Randy.
I had heard it said that, and I'd like to get your viewpoint on this, I had heard that if you kill wolves, you know, have a wolf control program, that ultimately you get more wolves. And because the logic behind that, I guess, is that the wolf population is basically dependent on the food supply. And by cutting down on wolf numbers, and the ungulate, the moose population grows up, and if you relax at all the predator control, their population will expand, to match the food supply. What do you think about that?
Dr. Heimer.
I think that's pretty much the way it works. The, you know, it's a simple energy in, energy out kind of system. And what you, you know, the idea that you could pulse predator control or do it once in a while, you know, heavily, and then quit for a while and everything would come to what the fantasy scientists used to call a high-density equilibrium has never proven out.
Jim?
You know, it's a renewable resource, Randy, and, you know, that is, it's not static. And so part of wildlife management is that we're managing it. You manage your lawn, you mow it every time the grass grows back.
Every Thursday.
You know, right? So part of what has had to come into play as fewer people are buying hunting, fishing, and trapping licenses, fewer people are being what we call recruited into those of us who actively partake in consumptive uses. When we talk about some of the grizzly populations that we were just talking about with Lucy, especially Unit 13, they went through the regulatory process of incentivizing take. That means, you know, those of us who go out hunting to try and go get them. It used to be one brown bear every 4 regulatory years with a tag. Then it was one every 4 years you don't have to have a special tag. Then it was one a year. Then it was, you know, please go shoot a grizzly bear. Nobody wanted to. So then you end up where historically we'd had more trappers, more people hunting. We were controlling and managing the predator population when those average citizens don't want to or can't get out for barriers. You know, when our federal land managers curtail us from doing these things. We hear that a lot with, you know, Coke Wallace abuts the park. You can't do these things in the park. And so he's, you know, they get too many wolves on the state land nearby because we can't all work in concert. Then you have these predator management opportunities or needs because we aren't managing the predators on our own. Many of our native elders will tell us, you know, if you're out there taking moose, it was always, we talked about it was your responsibility to also please take a bear. But people aren't doing that now.
Yeah. Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. We'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Alaska is new every season. Fall and winter bring new sporting opportunities for grouse, ptarmigan, and other small game hunting. Predator calling and trapping, snowshoeing, and winter camping. Gear up for success at Frontier Outfitters for traps, snares, and calls, guns, and ammunition. You'll stay warm and dry with the right clothing and rest easy with tents, sleeping bags, and camp necessities. Just downstairs, you'll find ATV and snow machine accessories and Sentry Hardware. For every season, there's Frontier Outfitters for your Alaskan lifestyle.
This time of year, nobody wants to talk about winter, but it's always good to be prepared. Like with the trees in your yard. Some of them might be leaning a bit, and they could take out a power line, hit a car, or worse, your house. So take care of it now with the professionals at the Great Alaska Tree Company. They can take down troubled trees, cut them up, and haul them away. That's what Great Alaska Tree Company does. Licensed, bonded, insured. So be prepared with the Great Alaska Tree Company.
Hi, this is Eric with Great Alaska Tree Company. Call me for a free estimate for your year-round and emergency service at 978-47.
Expecting a little snow this winter? Then you need a Honda snowblower from the Woodway. Fingertip steering controls, electric joystick shute control, one lever speed and direction control, super bright LED headlight. All this and backed by Honda's legendary reliability and a 3-year warranty. Wait, make that 6 years. If you buy in October, for the best selection, come in today and pick out your Honda before the first big snow. Ask about financing options. Be prepared the Alaskan way, the right way, the Woodway.
KFAR weather.
Cloudy skies expected today with a slight chance of rain showers. High temperatures reach up to 42. Winds out of the northeast around 5 miles per hour. Overcast skies again tonight. Lows level off around 31. Daytime highs approaching 45. Tomorrow, overcast skies. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. And Al just looks at me like, I'm not wearing headphones, and I don't care if you think I should.
He can't hear anyway.
I am Al Barrett, and I don't have to wear headphones because I don't want to wear headphones.
I am an instigator.
And with that, we're going to take a phone call because Al can't hear what's going to be said. Good morning. You're on the air without Al Barrett, and your name is?
Hey, this is Dan.
Hello, Dan.
Spicy Dan. Couple things. One, I'd like to get some seasoning to create compost so we can try it on that beautiful Coors Light beer battered pipe that he was talking about last week. And my other question is about fish as well. As I heard a statistic a few years ago back that there was 10,000 burbot per mile in the Tanana River. Has that figure been updated? And what's a good way to catch it? I'll take my answer off here.
10,000 burbot per mile is a large amount of burbot. You know, a mile is 3,560 feet.
5,280.
So that means there's a burbot. There's two burbot every feet.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Speaking of fish.
Yeah.
The Fairbanks Advisory Committee is going to have a special fisheries regulatory meeting on October 22nd at the Fish and Game Fieldhouse in the conference room. So if you're thinking of getting involved in the advisory committee, fishing regulations will be talked about then. And then also, just since we're playing off the talking about fish, October 31st, Halloween, is the deadline. If you've got some great fishing pictures, go online, just look up ADF&G fishing photos, submit. And you might make it into the handy dandy, the giant regulation book that just keeps growing, telling us when we can and can't fish. But you could get your picture in there, or your kid's picture.
There you go. Now, Craig,
yep.
How does Dan get you any of his spices, Essence by Dan?
He could stop by Boat Street Storage, phone number 907-888-0685. No, but you can see it down there. You pull right up there, and there's like 8 or 10 spots still available in the building. You'd be at the right building if you went to Boat Street Storage, 4122 Boat Street, right on the river, right on the price.
Yeah, to answer Dan's question, In all the years that I've been on the Fairbanks Advisory Committee and going to Board of Fish meetings, I've never heard the department giving us a survey on, you know, the density of burbot. But how to catch them is, using a herring or smelt.
Now, Craig, here's something that I heard, and bring this up with Johnny and Bobby Hajdukovic.
Yeah.
The Gila Lake River has the highest density of burbot in the United States.
I didn't know. I've never.
That's what I've heard.
Oh, the river that goes into Healy River.
And me and my brothers have a site on there. One day we might put a cabin on it.
Huh.
You never know. But I don't eat fish, so like I care about burbot.
Well, there's nets in the lake in Healy, like that the locals
pike
put
and
in
whitefish.
Yeah, primarily whitefish.
I did not get my whitefish. I had one of those spearing permits, and man, I gave it the old college try. We went out there. We just couldn't get
them
close enough.
You're on the
Chattanooga
and you couldn't do it? Oh.
They just wouldn't come close enough.
I was talking to Spitzer on my show the other day, Eric Spitzer, and he went up moose hunting up out of Keokuk somewhere. They caught some pike, and he said the best food he's ever had in his life. The guy showed him. They mix pancake batter with Coors Light, and then you roll you cube up the pike fresh. Freshly caught pike, roll it in there. Then they made with pickles and mayonnaise, they made some tartar sauce.
Nice.
He said they just ate it till it came out their pores. It was that good.
The weather was great, though. It was moonlight, and it stopped raining, and right up to the end we tried.
And I know you don't eat fish, Dave.
What you're saying, Jen, is you failed.
Yeah. Do we want to get into that?
I'm going to keep my body parts where they are. No, we're not getting into that. But you had a great time trying.
We did. It was great family.
That's a fun thing to do.
It is, yeah. Yeah, and it's shallow. Everybody should put in for that. And I hadn't done it since college.
What type of spear were you using?
It was a 5-pointer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I was hoping Jen would succeed and give me a little whitefish for bait. I set a line for burbot down the Tanana using out of date weenies. It was a complete failure.
You took some fishing game folks with you?
You have similarities between weenies? Your burbot fishing and your squirrel catching.
Yeah, well, usually I'm okay with burbot, but I often have suitable bait. This year I'm out.
So you're good dancers.
Yeah, they've got to go. Management intervention. Call the feds.
What's the deal with the mergansers? What are they doing?
Mergansers are fish killers.
Yes.
And they're doing very, very well on the Chena.
Okay.
And I don't know whether we had hundreds or tens or thousands of king salmon go up the Chena this year, but... I asked fish biologist the other day, how big is a king salmon when it comes down the river? And he held the fingers, 3-4 inches apart. What mergansers do is they hunt in packs.
Yeah, they're amazing. They're like a little army of back trollers.
Yeah, and they're killing fish. They get in a long line. They swim down the river. I presume they drive the fish on signal. Everybody goes, whoop, and they all go down.
Yeah.
They come up moments later with a smile on their face.
With that, we're going to take a phone call. Good morning. You're on KFVR Radio, and your name is?
This is Randy again. Sorry, I'll get right off, but I just wanted to direct something to Craig Campo regarding his show on Saturday. Trooper Eric Spritzer was telling a very suspenseful story, and right at the top of the hour, right before the climax, it cut off.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I did.
And I hope that next Saturday or sometime you relieve me from my tremendous state of suspense.
Was this when he walked through the coffin in Nunamiqua? Or which story was it? I don't remember.
That was the one. And
yeah.
I'll hang up here.
Yeah.
Then what happened, Craig?
Oh, yeah, he did. He went over he was stationed in St. Mary's. He went over to Nanamaqua, and he had to go find a lighter that a guy started a fire with, and the guy said he threw it out in the graveyard, and he went back there walking over these tussocks that are just barely underground, and 1 foot went all the way through a coffin, and he was stuck, and he's probably thinking, I wonder what I can get transferred out of this, but maybe go to Fairbanks or something. But he got stuck, leg trapped in a coffin in Nunamiqua, however you want to pronounce it. But yeah, that's just the average day in the life of Eric Spitzer.
He's walking around with both of his feet now.
Yeah. It's called One Foot in the Grave.
Jen, it's October. If you're going to go out into the field, where are you going and what are you doing?
Grouse hunting again. You know, all of our logging roads around town. We've seen some other folks out, but it's just been a pleasure to watch that little dog work. He still only wants to bring him to me. He doesn't trust Paul after Paul didn't show him where the birds were last year.
Oh.
He needs to see the chain of custody on these things.
Wayne, what are you doing?
I'll probably buy some smelt and try for burbot again.
Al?
I'm on the grouse scene, too. It's really good population.
I'm going fishing this weekend. My cousin's boat, a 37-footer. I'll be fishing for snapper, so it won't be in the area, but I'll give you a report.
You know what I would do is I would go down and I'd float the Delta Clearwater. And I'd just take that float and I'd look to catch some fish, maybe shoot a few greenheads, things like
maybe
that.
Maybe a grouse?
Maybe get Jen's dog and scare up a few grouse. But this would be a beautiful, iconic river with this type of weather. That's what I'd do.
Your Dalmatian doesn't do that?
Oh, God, no. He gets treats. You know, he's an indoor dog, spoiled rotten. All Emily's fault. Not mine. Not mine. Anyway, we got about 2 minutes left. Craig, you're going to Mexico?
Yeah, I'm going to Mexico, but I'm just going for a couple of weeks, but I'm going to go down there. My cousin's got a new 37-foot twin power cat boat. We buzz over to Cozumel and do some fishing and
drink a lot of Corona.
Yeah, I'm going to go test some new tequilas down there and just have a good old time.
Al?
You know, speaking of the Delta Clearwater, it's been a long time, and I don't know if many people know this, but you can catch silvers this year in there. So. Yeah. It's been a long time.
It's that time of year to go do it.
Oh, and it's fun down there this time of year. I love
silvers in the snow.
Nothing you're going to eat, but it's a lot of fun to catch.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Wayne?
Just a clarification. Everybody's seeing lots of grouse. Grouse are cyclic and seem to be abundant in springs after hot, dry weather for nesting, which we had this time.
Mm. Wow.
So,
and Jen.
So also, you know, another chore that you can do is go ahead and clean out your bird boxes. You know, we're hoping our kestrels will come back again in the spring. We put that little doorbell camera in there. Love to watch them lay their eggs and watch them hatch. Clean it out now so that you're ready for spring. So they, when they're going house hunting and they find a good realtor, that, you know, we've seen them before. And 1 year we didn't do it. And the male kept showing the female the box and she kept saying, no, I don't like the carpets.
There you go. Fairbanks, you have a great weekend. I'll see you tomorrow. And I'm going to have Ted Jones Jr., the owner of Frozen Smoke Barbecue, on the air with me. You have a great day.